Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The best things happen after dark. Nightclubs are the ultimate space for self-expression, escape, music, socializing, and forgetting for a moment the outside world. They're a place to discover ourselves, find new friends, and fall in love. As humans, we like to dance to a beat, and there's nothing like a good night out. I'm Jody Harsh. I'm a DJ, producer, and occasional club promoter. I know how to tear up a dance floor, and for this podcast, I want to explore with my guests how club culture and going out has shaped their identities and informed their work. I've got us the guest list and cue jump sorted, so we'll delve right into the hazy memory banks and hit the floor. This is Life of the Party. When this person speaks, people listen. She's an activist, a model, and a changemaker. We spent much of our 20s together in London's clubland, playing music and hosting parties. These days, you're more likely to find her fighting for equality, on the cover of every magazine, and sitting on the diversity and inclusion board of L'Oreal, a progressive move that proves speaking up really can create change for others. She's a juggernaut of social activism. She stands in the face of injustice, and she's made use of this year writing her debut book and raising a new family of cats and dogs. I'm very happy to have you on, Munro Bergdorf. This is your Life of the Party.
Thank you. That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me.
Not the only nice thing I've ever said about you.
Not the only, but probably the nicest. No, I'm joking.
Are you good?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm all right. Just doing a podcast.
Yeah.
It's new. It's a new thing for me, but I'm really enjoying it.
I'm so excited to hear the other episodes as well.
Yeah. So we've obviously, I mean, it's no secret that we're really good friends, but we've been speaking all the way through lockdown. But how have you been? Like, how was your lockdown?
Lockdown's been a bit of a ride. It's full of lots of ups and downs, but it's been a real moment for me personally to recognize and realize the next chapter of my life, I think. I think that a lot of us have had, you know, these existential moments and, you know, trying to think about what we want our life to be in the new world, and like almost mourning the old world, especially when it comes to, like, you know, people that have backgrounds in nightlife or like kind of marginalized communities. It's quite difficult because, you know, a lot of our reality is based in real life, you know. Whether or not that's clubs or even like communal prayer. So yeah, it's been a ride.
I want to start with you at the very beginning, your first ever party as a child. Can you remember like a birthday party or were there Christmas parties?
Yeah. Oh God, that was my dog just sneezed. So yeah, I was actually the first kid in my high school to throw a party, which is so lol because I actually had like no friends.
did people come?
People came because it was the first high school party, so they were like, oh, let's go. So like it was actually quite busy, but like I had no friends for the rest of the school experience. But I guess my first parties were birthday parties. Yeah.
Do you think that if you weren't the first to throw a party, do you think the attendance may have been slightly down?
Probably, yes. It was all right. It was fun, actually, because I threw it with... I went to an all-boys school, and I threw it with my friend who went to an all-girls school, so it was, like, an opportunity for, like, the boys and the girls to mix. It was really awkward, and everyone just stood either sides of the room. Nobody mixed. It was just, like, that kind of thing, yeah.
I do that now. We do that now.
Awkward slow dancing with hands on hips and things like that.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Essex.
Yes. Was there like sneaking out to nightclubs when you were sort of in your teens or anything?
No, not really. No, I was, you know, I was quite happy with my solitude. I didn't really even know that that existed, really. My access to Clubland was really through the pages of like the Face and ID and things like that. So I kind of lived vicariously through fashion magazines. Mm. But no, I never really snuck out. I started going out when I was about 16. And I went to my first club when I was about 15.
Right. And which club was that?
GAY.
Wow. Same. At the Astoria.
At the Astoria. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, there's so many people here. Like it was so big. And I was like, there's this many gay people. Mm. And it was an amazing feeling. I mean, you felt like you were part of something. And especially when you've grown up so isolated and living through fashion magazines, it was great to just be who I wanted to be out loud.
Mm. I've said this before in a previous episode, but I'll never forget that feeling of walking into the Astoria, into the main room and thinking, wow, I've arrived. This is where I belong. Like the moment I walked into that big room. Similar for you.
Yeah. You just look around, it was just a wall of people. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I was very drunk. So... yeah, very drunk. But I mean, it was amazing. It was incredible, yeah. I wish that we'd have another place like that.
Mm. And you went to university in Brighton?
I went to university in Brighton, yeah. Brighton's really where I found myself. And I started dressing how I identified and started, you know, just really, living out loud, not necessarily feeling like I had to conform, just being more myself.
Mm. And you'd go to gay clubs, I guess, in Brighton. Was there much of that? There's quite a big scene down there, isn't there?
It's different, though. London was a little bit more, you know, image-based. People just went out to have fun in Brighton. And, you know, I kind of spent more time in, like, the drag bars and drag clubs and did a bit of drag hosting at that point. I hadn't transitioned, so, it was fun. It was just a little bit more cabaret-based.
Yeah. And then when you moved to London, you started working in fashion PR, was it, or beauty PR?
I started working in fashion PR.
Right.
And that was really hard. I think that was around the same time that I met you, actually.
Mm. Yeah, where did we meet?
I don't remember. It must have been at Circus.
Yeah, which was a club night, which I did at Soho Review Bar at that time. Where did we meet there?
Yes, it was Soho Review Bar. I think it was... You did a party for Karl Lagerfeld, I think.
Did I?
I think so.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Karl Lagerfeld did a short film or something, and I think you were promoting it.
That's maybe.
Jodie's got the worst memory known to man, by the way.
I honestly couldn't tell you what I had for lunch today. I have no recollection of
the amount of anything. Times that Jodie starts like a story thinking it's something brand new. She's told you about five times.
I told you yesterday. And I've spent the whole day thinking, I can't wait to tell Monroe.
It always starts with, I've got this great idea. And I was like, I know!
So we have no idea where we met, but it was possibly something to do with Karl Lagerfeld.
So the first time that I think we actually met in person was when I was working in fashion PR, and it was a Matthew Williamson show. And I think I showed you to your seat.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did I say thank you?
You were nice.
Okay.
I think that was the first time that we actually like chatted, like, you know, just like PR kind of talk, nothing that deep.
Like, how's your fashion week?
Pretty much that.
So this podcast is about nightlife and how it sort of creates a space for expression and allows you to help find yourself. And how it helps shape you. How important was the freedom and the escapism of the club scene to help define who you are as a person today?
Oh my God, it was everything. It's always been everything to me, just because I think for a long time as a kid, I just felt like I needed to escape, and it was that place that I could escape to. It was that place that I could just be myself and make all the mistakes. And, you know, it's almost like nightlife has a different set of rules. And, you know, the mistakes that you would make in spaces, you know, like normal spaces, for lack of a better word, you know, you could get away with, you know, life lessons, like really hard life lessons in nightlife. And they weren't always great for me, but they were all lessons that I learned from.
Do you feel like you picked up life skills?
Oh my God, 100%.
Yeah.
My resilience probably comes from the fact that I worked in nightlife, and anyone that works in nightlife will tell you, you meet the best people and people at their worst. I wouldn't say the worst people, but you meet people at their best and their worst. Because people are either be out having the best time of their lives, or, you know, trying to mask something, trying to, you know, cover something up.
Absolutely. Sometimes you'll only see those people at their worst. So you just think they're always horrific people. Yeah. There's a lot of, and we call them vampires, a lot of, you know, like energy sucking type people, but it's just people in their worst places often.
So it definitely teaches you how to deal with people, how to push yourself as well, because after a certain period of time working in nightlife, you don't really want to go out a lot of the time, but it's your job. So it's like facilitating a fun time when you might be going through something. You might just want to sit home watching Netflix or whatnot. But it taught me so much. I mean, I'm so thankful, and thankful for like my mentors. I mean, it helped me plug into my community. I've got a wealth of knowledge of my community, because so much of our community has been based in nightlife over the years and over the decades. So I was very aware when I was living that reality that there was, you know, so many inspirational people that had come before me that had also lived that reality. So I was able to draw strength from that. But also from a trans perspective, working in fashion at that time, and I quit fashion, working in that side of fashion anyway, when I was 23. And I just didn't feel supported. I didn't feel like if I came out, then I would be supported in that environment. So I thought, okay, well, it's time to escape again. And I started learning how to DJ and got involved with you and your
Motley Crew.
Yeah, and there was like a little like gaggle of us, and it was really nice. We all looked out for each other, and look at us now.
So when you were working in fashion PR, you kept yourself the fact that you were going to transition. It was something that you felt that you needed to.
Yeah.
You weren't ready to reveal that.
I wasn't aware of my rights. I wasn't aware of the fact that in 2010, the Equality Act was actually passed, which would protect me in the workplace if I wanted to transition. But I didn't know that. And even if I did know that, then I wouldn't have felt that it would be an immediate effect. I didn't think that people would personally understand. Yes, the law would be on my side legally, but that wasn't really what I was concerned about. I just thought that I'd be humiliated. So I decided to leave, because I wasn't getting on with my managers anyway. And I just learned how to DJ. I just threw myself into it. I just allowed myself to get lost in nightlife a little bit and just live the fantasy. And I had the best time. I had such a good time. There were some really awful moments, but there was so many incredible moments. And I look back and just think, you know what? I definitely partied like a rock star, but it toughened me up. And I learned some lessons that, you know, nobody should have to you know, learn, but I learned them and just put me in good stead for being able to take on pretty much anything now.
Absolutely. And of course, you don't work in nightlife at all now. You may enjoy a fun night out every now and again with your friends, but it's very much something that you've kind of, you dipped into for a portion of your life and you
worked. Oh, well, a decade.
Okay, so you dipped into for a decade. It paid the bills and you met lots of great people and you had a good time. And then you were able to dip back out of it again.
Yeah. I mean, I never thought that my life would take this turn. And I'm really happy that it has. I mean, not so much happy in the way that it happened, but I feel like I'm in a great position to help younger queer people to, you know, find themselves without having to go through all of the stuff that I went through. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I worked in nightlife for 10 years and it didn't really feel like it was 10 years. It just went by really quickly.
Yeah.
Really quickly.
Tell me about it.
But it's like an alternative reality queer nightlife. You're like, you meet people that is their world. And we, you know, it is a different set of rules, different mindset, different language, like in history, like Polari, and like it, like the amount of culture that is in that space is incredible. I mean, I don't really go out anymore. I definitely am an ex-party girl.
Yeah. Like Lindsay Lohan.
Not like Lindsay Lohan. Love Lindsay, but no. But yeah, pretty much a little bit more like, I don't know, Samantha in Sex and the City.
Okay. How important are LGBTQ plus clubs as safe spaces, even more specifically for Black people, trans people? I'm talking in the context of nightclubs now.
Yeah, incredibly important, because you need that place where you feel like you can just go and let loose. And I don't think that I could ever think of anywhere that I could let loose apart from a club where I could, you know, be who I am and be who I was. And as soon as I walked through those club doors, like, that was me. You know, it doesn't matter what happened out on the pavement, what happened on the way to the club, what had happened in my day. When I was in that club, that was me. And she was there. She had arrived. And it was really difficult, you know. Those first days of my transition was so hard. I would get, you know, abused daily in public. And just, it was kind of inescapable. So to have a place where you felt like you could leave everything at the door was incredible. And you would meet the most fabulous people. You would never know who was going to be out, and then, you know, your night would take a turn and then you'd end up having an adventure. And I don't know, I lived the club kid life, like that was my reality, and I'm so glad that I did. But you know, seeing these kids grow up, I feel worried for them, because I'm like, well, where are you going to go?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you think 2020's lockdown might affect some people who may have needed to use nightlife as a exploration of self? I'm talking 18-year-olds and stuff. They've had nowhere to go out this year with the clubs being closed.
I just think that the spaces are going to change, and it's going to turn into, like, we were talking about this last night, and it's going to, you know, go into like illegal raves and underground culture, which, you know, culturally we'll probably look back on and be like, well, wasn't that wild? Wasn't that amazing? Mm. But, you know, from a safety perspective, it's not a controlled environment, and you know, there's not going to be medics, there's not going to be all of the things that, you know,
security
exactly, that make it a safe space. So I worry that there's not going to be safe spaces.
Yeah, and so many venues are literally closing.
Exactly, and there's not going to be the money behind it to, you know, facilitate it to be a place that is, you know, continuously looking after the well-being of the people that are in it. I also worry about people that work in nightlife, you know, the amount of people that are now unemployed because the clubs aren't open. And what a shame that is, because people that work in nightlife are so creative. And I just think it's such a waste of potential and talent. So, I mean, I know that that potential and talent will go into a different area, but it's just such a shame that that isn't being tapped into at the moment.
I guess it's about, I was thinking about the club as a safe space, because I guess a space could never be, a space could never be completely safe, but I guess it's about creating the safest space possible.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, you don't think about how many people it takes to put on a night. And I don't think that people that don't run club nights actually realise how much goes into a club. Like, you and me have both put on parties and clubs, and we know. But there's also so many things that can go wrong. And, like, I mean, I've seen people die on dance floors. I've seen people that are in the midst of addiction that are out and, you know, running themselves into destruction. And if there's nobody there to help, or help steer them into the right direction, or monitor or control the environment, then I worry about addiction. We've already got a huge problem with addiction in the queer community. I worry about, you know, attacks, racism, people being able to diffuse arguments and things like that. So yeah, it does make me worry about what these spaces will look like. It does feel a little bit apocalyptic, but I don't know, hopefully it won't be, hopefully we'll all move forward with a common goal of understanding that this is our space and it should be sacred.
Totally. And we've all had some kind of bad experience in a nightclub, even you know, with it meant to be a safe space. I mean, I've had run-ins with bouncers in the past, sort of, you know, or like weird altercations with people, you know, way back when. But I guess a club can never be completely safe, but it's about creating the safest space possible.
Definitely, definitely.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I want to talk to you about Pussy Palace.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that. It's something I've never been.
Well, yeah. So Pussy Palace is a collective that I joined. I didn't start it. My friends Nadine and Skye, two Scottish femmes from Glasgow, started it. And it just really started as a reaction to club culture that isn't necessarily gay, but is femme-centric, and how so much of femme-centric clubbing is really built around the attention of men.
100%. Nightclubs are mostly built for sex.
Yeah. Well, period.
There's a strap line there.
It was taken, I mean, it was sexual, but in our expression, how we dressed and how, you know, the music that was playing and whatnot, and but it wasn't for the attention of men. And you know, there was rules that men had to abide by in terms of, you know, because there's a lot of sex workers that went, there was a lot of people that work in nightlife, like it was a lot of trans women, there was a lot of you know, women that just wanted to just wear what they wanted to wear, and that might be minimal. So it was amazing to be part of that. And originally it was me and oh God, I don't know. I think it was like 8 of us. And then it got whittled down eventually because, as we know, with girl bands, everybody fights.
Jerry.
And yeah, it became 4 of us, me, Sky, Nadine and K-Sang. And they're still my best friends. And we learned so much. I was a DJ at the night and the other girls ran it. So...
So it's a place to own your sexuality and yourself as opposed to, offering it. Some clubs we go to is, you know, it's all about attracting the opposite sex or whatever.
No. The crowd is 90% femmes. And that includes non-binary people, cisgender women, straight girls, gay girls, trans women. There was everyone there, but it wasn't for the attention of men, and there was a limit on how many men could come through the door.
Okay, amazing. And what were the rules?
The majority of men were gay. So it was like a queer ethos. But, you know, I mean, that, you know, if a guy came in and he started, you know, hitting on girls and making them feel uncomfortable, then he would be asked to leave.
Yeah, I think he's going to be quite ganged up on. He's outnumbered.
We had the Pussy Palace policy. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was all about consent, and it was, you know, no touching, no staring, respect the space, respect each other. So very much that kind of mindset. Just
essentially the rules that in a dream society would just be the obvious thing that everyone...
Yeah, it was all common sense, but a lot of the time when people are drinking in nightlife and, you know, people don't think, and they just treat each other as if it's a menu, you know? And I think it took away that culture and replaced it with something where you could just let go and not be worried about being hit on, because that's not what you're there for.
Sure. There are other spaces where you might want to be hit on. I'm thinking room service, RIP.
Yeah, there are, you know, there's clubs for different reasons. And I think you just need to respect those reasons and respect what each club's about. And yeah,
we've had some funny times at room service. How do we describe room service, my old party?
How do you describe room service? I mean, it's very of the time. I don't think that necessarily it would fit in now. In certain, you know, conversations that we're having and all of this kind of stuff. But of the time and as a throwback, I think it's great. But I don't know, I think a lot of queer nightlife is based around sex, it can kind of, I don't know, if you look at it at a glance, it can kind of seem problematic. But, you know, sometimes it is just about sex.
Yeah. We had some fun nights. Have you got any funny memories of us running around?
That basement.
That bloody basement. That bloody corridor. That building's gone now in Soho.
I know. I always walk past it and just think about all the memories.
Yeah. It's now just a hole in the ground.
I don't know. If we put our heads together and wrote a memoir, like a joint memoir of all of the crazy things that we encountered and that, you know, all of the parties that we threw together...
People wouldn't believe it. I have a really funny memory of us in... I think I was doing a party in Brixton.
Oh my God.
Do you remember this?
No!
Do you remember?
Yes.
And you were with me for some reason and...
I was working it, that's why.
Yeah, were you DJing or hosting or something?
I was
something
hosting,
like
that? Yeah.
You were hosting, you were bringing like your crew down and... It's like my go-go dancers didn't show up or something. It was like a Sunday afternoon or something. Like the go-go dancers slept in, so we had to sort of...
Improvise.
Is this a story for another day?
You can tell it if you want. It's not my doing.
Shall I save it? I'll save it for the book. Maybe we won't.
Employing sex workers is very important, so...
Absolutely! And I paid up front, so I did absolutely nothing wrong. Have you ever been to a house party totally uninvited?
Yes, that was, you know, when I was getting to know people in Brighton, I was always showing off at house parties uninvited. But I don't know. I kind of felt like sometimes I was the most interesting person in that room.
Yeah. You have every right to be there anyway.
Well, I just kind of think that if you're going to turn up to a party uninvited, then be fun and like create the vibe and be like, well, it doesn't matter that I wasn't invited, but aren't you having the best time?
100%. If you're offering something to the room, fine. You have every right to be there.
Exactly. I think there's a code of conduct, isn't there? Yes. And like, if you're not invited to the party, then at least be fun.
100%. And what about like blagging your way into like a glitzy event of some kind, like something fabulous?
I mean, I don't think I've ever turned up to a glitzy party uninvited, but definitely tried to blag my way in on the guest list to like a glitzy club or something. Mm. In my youth. Mm. But no, not really. I think we've all been stuck outside being like, you know, like I know so and so.
Oh my god, it gives me so much fear. I'm so bad at it. I'd rather just get back in the car and just leave. Have you ever found love on the dance floor?
Yes. Wasn't the most constructive love, but all consuming and groundbreaking and like reality shattering. It was like, yeah, I mean, I spent my life on the dance floor. So all of the people that I met for a certain amount of time were in clubs and of that mindset. So, I mean, I met most of my ex-boyfriends and yeah, most of my ex-boyfriends on dance floors. And yeah, I mean, it either went really, really well or really badly. Mm. And I don't regret anything, you know. I mean, that those are some of the lessons that I learned that I've grown from, and I'm really happy that I did grow from them, and that it happened sooner than later.
Yeah. Do you go out much? I mean, obviously we've been in lockdown, but do you get to go out with your friends much anymore? I know you don't obviously work in nightlife and stuff, but do you still enjoy sort of a night down at a club? I don't think I've seen you in a nightclub for a long time.
No, it's not really me anymore. Mm. I think I just did it to death. And no, it's not really. I don't really have fun anymore. I think the dynamic for me has changed. I think that a big part of me going out to clubs was the anonymity and going out and just being able to run riot and just have fun and have a certain sense of, you know, that people kind of knew who you were, but not really. And now I kind of feel like if I go into a club, then I'm just a bit on high alert. And I just think that, you know, if I really let go, then I'll be questioned and I'm doing really high profile stuff. And my mind goes into a different space and I can't really enjoy myself, can't let myself go. And then people come up to me and want to have perfectly innocent, lovely conversations, but that's not what I'm there for. And, you know,
the dynamic completely, because of course you've laid yourself so bare and you're so open to, in order to help other people, that you're just kind of like almost naked. Right, you know, which really helps people.
It feels a bit like that, like when I'm out, but no, I mean, I just change the spaces and I just like to go to like, and it sounds really bougie, but I like to go to like, you know, members clubs or like hotel bars and kind of, you know, just change the settings or go to restaurants or that kind of thing.
And just hang with your friends, right?
If I'm going out, then those are the places that I go. If I'm going, you know, if I'm just seeing my friends, then I just go to my friend's house or if I, you know, just go anywhere. But yeah, I don't really go to clubs that much anymore. I mean, I love a good party. And every now and again, there's like a really amazing party that, you know, will either be like a fashion thing or a beauty thing or whatnot. So I do that, those kind of things, but not really ever down the club.
And in and out.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you have any rules? Do you have any sort of like...
Don't be the first one in and don't be the last one out.
I like it. That's another one for the part, for the code of conduct. No, what was it? The code of conduct? The rule?
Yeah.
Do you remember that scene in... Do you ever see Party Monster?
Yes.
Where they sort of go around clockwise. Then they go around anti-clockwise.
You have love you doing the friend? Rounds. You're like, come on, let's do and do the rounds.
I have to keep it moving. I can't sit down in a club. I can't sit at a table. If I'm not DJing, I have to be circling. Like, I have to... Got to keep it moving.
Because otherwise you'll just get your ear chewed off by somebody, won't you?
Yeah, by some like, horrific person. And I'll be like, I want to go.
Make up an excuse. That's also something that I got really, really good at, is making up excuses not to speak to somebody.
Trust me, that this is the sort of life skill that you pick up in a nightclub. Small talk, there's nothing worse.
Yeah, no, there's nothing worse than small talk. But also, I don't know, I just think I've seen the most wild things. Like, things that you would never, ever... Things that you would never ever imagine would ever happen, I have seen happen. And I know that you've seen them too, and we're probably thinking of the same things. On stage, no less. But
oh yeah, something springs to mind now. I think I know what we're
a certain person's birthday.
Yes, I remember. Right, another one for my book. If you could visit a nightclub, I know you don't like clubbing anymore, but if you could visit a club from the past.
No, actually, no, I go back. I do like nightclubbing, but just not in London. It's a little too close to home. I love clubbing in New York.
I saw you at a club. That's probably the last time.
I'm always in the clubs in New York.
Lady Fags Club.
Yes, Holy Mountain. Yes. But I also love China Chalet in New York.
Downtown New York.
That's it.
I heard that just closed.
Yeah, it did. There was a campaign to buy China Chalet as well.
Yeah, everything, all the good places, all the spots.
I know. I love nightlife in New York. I just feel like it's a little elevated. London's very different. It's a little bit more real.
Mm. And people really get off their face in London. It's a real escape.
Yeah.
New York's a bit like CNBC, Meet Someone Gorge, In Bed by Two kind of vibe, I feel.
Yeah, London's a little more hardcore.
London's a bit more like, right, it's Tuesday, where are we going now? but if you could visit a club from the past, like a Studio 54 or, you know, where would you go?
Oh, God. Where would I go? Oh my God, I loved Pop Stars, you know.
Oh, Pop Stars at the Scala Friday nights. Tell us about Pop Stars.
Pop Stars was one of the first clubs that I went to, actually. And it was just amazing. They had like the indie room, they had the R&B room, and they had the like the main dance floor. And I just liked that, and you know, you could go and like, we didn't have like, you know, download. You couldn't really download music like you can now. You couldn't stream it. It was like a whole faff back in the day. Mm. So you could go out and you could hear songs on the dance floor that you would never hear anywhere else. Mm. And it was just a feeling that was, I'm just getting goosebumps now because it was it was amazing. And like sweat dripping down the walls. You didn't care about what you looked like because there was no social media. You would just go and just dance yourself into a sweaty mess and then go and have like a burger around the corner.
In King's Cross.
At King's Cross, yeah. And then you would go and sleep wherever you could find a bed. Did not mean it like that. I meant just like sleep wherever you could crash. But usually on a friend's couch or something because I didn't live in London at that point. That is what I meant.
Oh, you're on the commute, on the Brighton commute.
Get the 4 a.m. train home.
The first train. Oh, that brings back memory. Me on the first train down to Canterbury after a night at GAY, then we'd have to go and sit in Balan's Cafe.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't miss that.
I don't miss it, but I wouldn't change it for the world. It was like absolutely a whole thing, because like the adventure and yeah, like what would happen in that time and like the crazy things that you would see. And like Balan's used to serve alcohol in teapots because they didn't have the license.
It was like prohibition.
I know.
They were like code words for like, oh, I'll get a black Americano, and it'll be like, oh yeah, it was like rum and coke.
But all of these bar owners as well, like bar owners are such characters, and working with bar owners is a real skill because they're often very tricky. But I don't know, I mean I learned a bunch from them as well, because they'd often be like the most bitter queens, but they kept me employed.
They paid the rent. Yeah.
But like they were often very, very difficult people to work with.
How to work your way around an absolutely manipulative snake.
Yeah.
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 Story of my life. I'm going to hit you with some quick fire questions. Dream guest list. You're throwing a party. Who are you inviting?
Brittany.
Mm.
Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, we're in LA in like 2007 here, are we?
Paris Hilton.
There you go.
Want the Holy Trinity.
Okay.
Naomi Campbell.
Oh, so Brittany, Lindsay and Paris counted as one.
They're one.
They're one guest. They're okay, one booth. Fine. That's one booth. And then Naomi Campbell, Donatella Versace.
Basically, the gang.
Yeah.
All the squads out.
And then Gaga, 2012 Gaga.
Okay. Was that Born This Way Gaga?
Fame Monster Gaga.
Okay, okay.
Grace Jones. I actually met Grace Jones once.
So you just want every... Oh, hold on, we're going to circle back on that. So basically you want just every like pop icon.
Yeah, I want all the divas.
Okay, perfect. Can we circle back on that Grace Jones story?
Oh my God, yes. So, fun fact, I used to work in Lisa Vanderpump's old venue.
Yeah.
And it's no longer there anymore. It was called Shadow Lounge. Yeah. And I was DJing to an empty room.
Oh.
I know. Well, and lo and behold, who comes in? Philip Tracy and Grace Jones. And they're the only people in the room at the beginning of the night. And I just go,
She's first in. She doesn't follow that code of conduct, does she?
Well, I mean, to be honest, there should have been more people in there at that time. So I think that she...
But you were DJing,
DJing. And this must have been when I was like, what, 25? And so I was the very first DJ on. And yeah, she just came in and she was just, oh my God.
Right, so you're DJing, Grace Jones walks in. What happens?
She's just... being Grace Jones, she has this hat on and must have been Philip's hat. Philip Tracy is a hat designer that's...
A milliner.
A milliner, that's it.
Yes.
Who has designed hats for the Queen and Lady Gaga and everybody. So yeah, they're just like having the best time, and I'm just DJing and I'm just trying to like work up the confidence to go over and say hi, because I've met Philip a lot, but I've never met Grace, and you don't just go up to Grace Jones like going up to Naomi and just saying hi, like you don't do it. There's a level of respect. And yeah, I just went over to her on the way to the toilet to make it look casual, and I was just like, hi. And she was so cool and so lovely and just like said that I looked really like nice. And yeah, she just sat me down, offered me a glass of champagne. And I think that we were doing Tiger impressions or something like that, as you do. But
on a Tuesday at Shadow Lounge with Grace Jones.
But yeah, it was amazing. It was great to meet her. I mean, she's an absolute icon.
She'll be on dance floors until the day she dies. Who's the DJ? Who's playing the music? You can't say me.
Who's playing the music? I would say probably Honey Dijon.
Oh, love.
The energy that she has behind the decks is unsurpassed. It's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm coming to this party. This, like, surpasses every party that's ever happened in all time. I'm coming. Monroe, this is your life of the party.
Thank you for having me. Anything for you.
Mwah. This has been Life of the Party with me, Jodie Harsh. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't subscribed just yet, please do. There's a new episode every week. Right, see you at the next party.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.